Hi, and welcome to the Well-Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Anne.
And we are librarians with the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. This week, we're going to be talking about Anne's reading life, which is something we did with me a few weeks ago. And it's based on the Reading Lives podcast by Book Riot that Jeff O'Neill does. Mm-hmm. And we described it a little bit in the last time we did this, but it is he brings on somebody book-related and talks about how they have spent their lives reading pretty much and what got them into reading. And we thought it was really fun. So we thought we'd give you a peek into our reading lives. You ready, Anne?
Yes.
All right. Here we go.
I'm scared of my reading secrets coming out.
So were you a big reader as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I read everything I could get my hands on when I was a kid. And that became sort of my trademark to always be reading to the point where I look at pictures of myself as a kid and I've always got a book with me or like my sister's teen magazines. I don't know if I understood what was going on with those, but it had words and that was good enough for me. So I was into classics a lot, like the children's classics, like Anne of Green Gables. Mm-hmm. I was really, really into that. Mm-hmm. And the Chronicles of Narnia was another thing that just, I must have reread those over and over and over again. And I really loved the Little House books, Lauren Goes Wilder books. Mm-hmm. I think I read all of those probably more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about what's in common with all of those. Mm-hmm. And they all have food in them. And so I think that maybe I just wanted to read about the different things they
ate.
Oh, yeah.
What was the food that was in the Chronicles of Narnia book? That always sounded so good to me. And then when I found out what it was actually...
Is it Turkish Delight?
Turkish Delight. And then when I saw what it actually was, I was like, oh, that is not how I pictured that.
I still eat it and think this is so delightful, but it kind of isn't. But
I've never had it.
I just want to think about that scene.
Yes, it looks so different to me than what I was picturing in my head.
It was his most beloved food, so...
Yes.
The thing he sold his soul for. Yeah, I feel like the classics were really my go-to, but I think that was partly because I was the youngest in my family, and so those were the things that were around from my siblings reading them. Mm-hmm. I don't remember reading a lot of things that were written at my age level that were contemporary to me, but I did really, really, really love Babysitter's Club when I was a little kid, and I pretty much lived for the Scholastic book orders coming in.
I loved those things.
There was no better day.
No.
It was the greatest day. You get your order. That was the best day. And you would get the next, the coming month's brochure.
Uh-huh. I loved that.
So much fun. So those, I think, were my biggest book loves. I know there were other things there was a series of books by, her name is Ruth Chu, and she wrote this series of books about witches that were really exciting to me. So that I sort of got into liking supernatural stuff that way. And I just was really intrigued by all of that. So anything and everything, I think, was my childhood reading life.
And were there any books that your parents didn't let you read?
There were, for the most part, they didn't pay a lot of attention because I was the youngest and I'm, there's a big gap between me and my sister. Mm-hmm. So they, I think, just were sort of sick of policing anything at that point. So I don't remember a lot of that. I do know that I couldn't read Forever by Judy Blume.
Oh,
that was one that I know my mom said, you're not to read this book. Mm-hmm. And I was a very, very law-abiding kid and probably still am a very law-abiding person. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, well, if my mom says so, then no, I will not.
So
be
you weren't tempted to try
to
read it?
No, I never tried. I still have never read it. So, I know in grad school we talked about what a revolutionary book it was, but that was not part of my reading life at all. And I remember being able to check out anything I wanted from the library, and my mom never did a run through or checked my books or anything. I know I checked out There's a Boy in the Girl's Bathroom Lewis Sackar, I think. Mm-hmm. And I know she kind of at one point sort of looked at me with should you really be reading that? Yeah. But that's the only one I can remember. For the most part, it was just...
And how old were you when you were trying to read Forever and she said not to?
I don't think I even tried. Yeah. I think it just was maybe my siblings had checked it out and she said no. So I knew that that was not something for me to read. So I don't think that it was... I don't think I tried, really.
Okay.
But...
And it's so... It's so made an impact on you that you still to this day have not read it.
There's too many other things to read than to take my mom's wrath into consideration at this point. So.
Okay, so you said your siblings are older. So did you read a lot out of your age level, you would say?
Yeah, probably. But I also really liked reading, like because the Scholastic books would come in and they'd have all these random little series that were going on at the time. I would always read things like that that were just laying around the school library. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember any specifics of those, but I feel like I always was willing to read under my age level too, mm-hmm. just because they looked kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then I know that I was reading like chapter books pretty mm-hmm. early on. So yes, but I can't remember specifics of what I leapt to mm-hmm. at a certain point. It just was chapter books.
Right.
So I don't remember reading picture books at all. I yeah. must have at some point, but yeah. I don't remember them yeah. in any way in my life.
Ever. And do you feel like you skipped any fundamental books that you should have read and you didn't or haven't?
Probably some picture books that were classics I didn't get to. I didn't read Sweet Valley High. We talked about that in yours. I never read any of those.
It is my goal in life to get you to read a Sweet Valley High book and a romance novel.
I don't have any problems with that. I would look forward to that. I didn't read The Hobbit when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and I feel like a lot of people had that as a kind of formative mm-hmm. reading experience. I read it as a teenager or as an adult, but not as a kid. So I don't know that there were that many that I skipped. I'm sure I could come up with some, but I usually would reread them later or yeah. as an adult, go back. Like in grad school, you mm-hmm. read a lot of books. And
right.
I think there are a lot of times I just said, oh, I never got to this mm-hmm. as a kid. So now I'll get to this now. So,
All right. So skipping ahead to high school, did you enjoy what you read in your high school reading curriculum?
Yeah, I feel like because I was so afraid of authority, I think I would just I thought, well, if the teacher says this is a good book, this must be worth my reading. And now as an adult, there are things I can remember that I think are I don't really care about anymore. Mm-hmm. Shakespeare never really did a lot for me. Mm-hmm. I really liked Hamlet. I thought Hamlet was really interesting, but I felt like when you're just having to read plays with your classmates and everyone take a different voice,
yeah.
that doesn't make anyone inclined to read stuff and right. get excited about it. So I still don't really care about Shakespeare.
Professor.
No, I should have taken it in college. I would have had. Yeah, I know that they would take us to like field trips where we'd have to see Shakespeare in action, and I still never felt the spark yeah. of it. That it just didn't do anything for me. So, but when I was a senior, I took a class that was just humanities. It wasn't an English class. It was kind of a outside of the regular curriculum class. And we did Greek plays in that, and I'm sure some Shakespeare as well, but I had never experienced anything from that genre before, and that was just completely mind-blowing to me. Mm-hmm. I thought that it was so the emotions were so much crazier than Shakespeare, mm-hmm. and I thought the language was really beautiful, and there's just something about it that really struck me in a way that Shakespeare never really did. So I can appreciate Shakespeare. I don't want anyone to think that I'm like ragging on Shakespeare, but it just wasn't my thing.
Right.
So I know that when we read The Lottery, that was something else that was really kind of opened my eyes to how compelling books could be or the assigned reading could be, because it just takes you on a wild ride. And so that was really exciting to me. It seems like in high school we read a lot of short stories and a lot of excerpts, and that just wasn't the most exciting. We didn't read a lot of full novels when I was in high school, so I missed out on that.
All right, so what were you reading personally during that time that you were reading these books in high school?
I don't remember a lot from when I was in high school, when I was in actual high school, but I was an exchange student when I was in high school for a year, and I read all kinds of things during that year. So because you're reading like the limited number of English books you can get your hands on, then I read a lot of classics, and that's when I got into stuff like Jane Austen, and I read a lot of Sherlock Holmes during that time. I read a lot of Dickens too, which seems kind of weird that because it wasn't like mainstream Dickens, it was Hard Times. I remember reading and thinking, wow, yeah, I don't know why I'm reading this. It wasn't that exciting, but it was just something that the library had that I could actually get into. And I got really into Scandinavian literature at that time, and so I read.
You were way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, except that I don't think that that type of like the Scandinavian noir didn't exist at that point, or maybe it did, but I wasn't reading it. Uh-huh. But there's a Danish writer named Peter Hoog that mm-hmm. wrote a book. He wrote Smell the Sense of Snow.
Yeah.
That's probably his most famous book, and he wrote a book called The History of Danish Dreams that I was really really into when I lived over there. I sort of missed out on a lot of popular fiction during that that time and didn't read a lot of that in high school, but I got a good grounding in the classics, I think. So they're benefits to having a small library to choose from.
Your choices are limited.
Yeah.
All right. So you're an exchange student. Where were you an exchange student?
I went to Denmark, and thus the Scandinavian books. It was the greatest year of my life. It was so much fun. And to get an opportunity to go someplace foreign when you're a teenager is pretty rare, I think. And so then to go and find this entire culture that you just knew nothing about was just amazing. So all of the foods and all the books and all the weird Danish comedy that I think is hilarious, those are all things that really were big influences on me later in life.
All right, so moving on to college, did you have any influential college classes? Were you an English major?
I wasn't. I was a humanities major. Okay. So basically because I couldn't pick something. I was really into English, and I was really into history, mm-hmm. and I was really into art history. Mm-hmm. It was cool, though, that my professors would often, in things that weren't English classes, would often take literature and incorporate that into the curriculum somehow. Mm-hmm. So I took an art history class that got really into French literature at the time. So I got excited about Dangerous Liaisons and things like that. And that was exciting. I took a class both professors' classes. One was the history of the novel, and one was, I can't remember exactly the title of it, but it was kind of women's literature mm-hmm. and the rise of women's literature. And that made me start thinking a lot about the way books for women have always sort of been looked down on, mm-hmm. and that even now that's something that's really common. Yep. And from the very beginning, from 18th century, then that was just the way it was. So I was really excited by the idea that of reading how women read about their everyday lives. And it wasn't exactly high literature, but it still recorded how they lived and what was important to them. And I thought that was really, really cool. So we read some Jane Austen. We read some Frances Burney mm-hmm. I think we read Cecilia. Mm-hmm. And that's a really big book, too, if you're into your big books. we read some Daniel Defoe, I remember. Mm-hmm. And I just thought seeing how the novel became what it is today was a really cool development. Yeah. So I enjoyed that. I took some more Scandinavian literature classes, so I got into Ibsen, and I really liked Isaac Dinesen mm-hmm. was one of my favorite writers. And then I took a class that was called Death, Decadence, and Disease.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so that had a lot of things like Red Frankenstein and Wuthering Heights and The Picture of Dorian Gray mm-hmm. and all these kind of gothic books that I just couldn't get enough of that. And so that was definitely something I didn't need to take in college uh-huh. since I wasn't an English major and it didn't really fit into what I was doing at all. But I just took it because it sounded too cool.
Sounded too good. So what about for your personal reading? Were you reading the same types of books for your enjoyment, or is there a different type in college that you were reading?
In college, I had just gotten the internet for the first time. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like at my family's home. Mm-hmm. So that was when Amazon started doing Listmania.
Oh, right.
Is that what it's called? I think Listmania.
I think that's what it is. Yeah, where you could, as a consumer, put post lists.
Yeah. And so I would just spend hours and hours and hours on that. So I'd find all these, I'd find one book, and then it would do this rabbit hole down to all these other things mm-hmm. that were so much fun. So I'd find like a list about books about tea, and I'd read all these books that were somehow revolved around tea. Or culinary mysteries were the thing that I got really into at the time. Uh-huh. That was sort of my pleasure reading, I guess. When I was too stressed out for school, then I would find these culinary mysteries, and I would make these huge lists. I shouldn't say they're huge, because they're actually on like 1-inch post-it notes, and I would write in like 3-point font all these lists for myself. I still have all of them.
Do you?
Yeah, they're all in my wallet for whenever I get around to them. So that was really fun to get into the world of kind of popular fiction, even though I don't know if it's exactly popular, but things that weren't assigned for school, because mm-hmm. I had always been really focused on school and classics and feeling like I had to get all this backlist read before I could move on to anything else. So yeah, that was kind of a really formative period to see how book trails could lead me down new paths.
And are there any books from high school or college that you read that have stuck with you?
I don't remember a lot from high school. From college, I remember being really intrigued by A Doll's House, which is a play by Henrik Ibsen, and being really intrigued by choice and the choices that we have to make. So I tend to think about that still a lot, of the difference between what's good for you and what you're responsible for. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of responsibilities in my life right now, but in the past I've kind of thought about that a lot. Mm-hmm. And so that's definitely one that stuck with me. I don't remember high school at all, though, having anything that I can remember. But I think because I was gone for that year, yeah, that I think people read a lot of stuff that may have been the year they read novels, and yes, I just missed out. I would have had my happiest year of high school, but I was not there.
You mentioned reading Sherlock Holmes. Is that what got you into the mysteries and the spooky books, or how would you say that you came to those?
No, I'm actually not a huge Sherlock Holmes fan at all. They were there and I read them, but I have some problems with Holmes. Uh-huh. They're enjoyable, but I think that there are things about it where I feel like, oh, I wasn't given that information, so how could I solve that? And I like books where I have a chance to solve. I think I got into mysteries because my mom was a big mystery reader, and she always had a lot of Agatha Christie and Niall Marsh, and P.D. James was also a favorite of hers. So she had all those books around her when I was growing up, so they were just part of my everyday existence of seeing those. But I also had a friend that was... we were very convinced that her house was haunted.
Ooh.
And so this is like a 1960s home in Arizona. There's no chance that anything spooky ever happened in this house. But we just got really, really into that idea. So we read a book called The Dollhouse Murders by Betty Wren Wright. Do you remember that
I don't remember that. Doesn't sound familiar to me.
All these ghost story books. And
were they for kids or adults?
Yeah, okay. For kids. And we got really, really into that. Mm-hmm. And we started with those and then kind of graduated onto R.L. Stein and Christopher Pike.
Oh, Christopher Pike.
Yeah, yeah. Those were the big leagues.
I read a ton of Christopher Pike.
So those were, I think, really formidable in really formed my opinion of mysteries. And my mom watched a lot of mystery too on PBS, the show Mystery. And I really liked the Edward Gorey intros to that. And I just was really just intrigued by that aesthetic. And so I wanted to surround myself with that. So I just loved anything that felt like that. So I don't know, the rest is history. Yeah. I just became mystery obsessed ever since then.
That's the difference between you and me. That beginning of the PBS mystery freaked me out. Oh my gosh. And what was the other one? There was something on HBO that was like Tales from the Crypt.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I hated that. Like I would, it just freaked
me out.
Yeah,
that was
my,
I want to do that Friday night kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, we can still be friends, but very different childhoods.
I know. Very different. All right. So how did you decide to become a librarian?
I always had people tell me I should be a librarian when I was growing up, and I always sort of dismissed it, and they just would say it because I was always reading and I read so much more than any of the other kids in my social group. And so I don't know why I didn't ever consider it. It just never was something I thought about. Mm-hmm. And then in high school, we had to do some paper or something that was about a career. And I thought, oh, I'll do a librarian because I always have people talk about this to me and I didn't really have any other ideas. And so I had to go to the university library to get some... they had some book there that I needed for this paper. I don't know why they would have assigned a book that required going to the university, but I needed it for some reason. And I remember walking through the stacks and just loving the smell and thinking, oh, I could do this. This is such a comforting feeling to me. And so that was sort of my plan for a while. And then I went to college and sort of, that was still the plan. I worked in libraries from day one of college. I started working at the university library the summer before I started college. And that's just always what I wanted to do. But then I sort of, at a point, working as a paraprofessional, felt like librarians only went to meetings and they never actually did anything at the desk. And that's not what I wanted. I wanted to actually do research. I was always into the research side of it. I was always into learning about new things. I was always really curious about stuff. And so I thought that maybe just working in a library would be enough for me. Mm-hmm. And then I took a job in another state and was working at the university library there. And all of my friends that I met there were library school students. They have a good library school. And it started to become kind of frustrating that they were going to get better jobs than I would have because they had this piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And I had like 10 years of experience or something at that point. And, mm-hmm. and they had never worked in libraries, but they suddenly were qualified to do things that I thought sounded really fun. So then I started thinking about going to school. And because I was a staff member, I was able to go to school and be working full-time at the same time. And it mm-hmm. just sort of fell into my lap in a really nice way. And yeah,
you came here.
Yeah, then I don't know what else I would do. Sometimes I think about what I would do if I weren't a librarian. I literally have no idea what I would do.
I remember your interview and we talked about books like half the time. Yeah. We should have known then what was to come. I remember that was when Gone Girl was like, we talked about Gone Girl and Goodreads.
Yeah.
I remember that on Skype. We interviewed her. All right. And is there anybody in your life in particular that has influenced your reading? You mentioned your mom with the mysteries.
Yeah, definitely my mom. She's the person that I kind of go to the most for not necessarily book recommendations, but where we just discuss books a lot. And she loves, my family has a little bit of a love of hate reading. And so she'll have some book that she had to read for a book club that she really hated. And she'll say, you have to read this book so that we can hate on it together. Exactly. And the rest of my family reads really different stuff than I do. They're not as into mysteries as I am. And they're more into American literature mm-hmm. than I ever got. So I kind of look at them, not as necessarily an influence, but kind of an aspirational feel mm-hmm. where I think I really ought to read that because my sister really loved that or my brother really loved that. But I have a couple of friends that have really influenced my reading. I have one who reads really, she always picks really, really good stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of high end books. Like they're always more literary than what I find myself reading. So I always have her in the back of my head of thinking Cheryl read that and mm-hmm. she liked that. I should read more like Cheryl. And and I'm sure she would say, oh, no, I read a lot of trashy stuff. But then I have another friend who has a Spanish linguistics PhD who reads trashy books on the side. Uh-huh. And so I love that because it sort of gives me this feeling of she has this incredible degree and she's a professor, but then she's reading Pretty Little Liars in her spare time. And that sort of makes me feel like I'm allowed to read whatever I want mm-hmm. and not feel like it has to be literary mm-hmm. all the time. So I appreciate those kind of calming influences on my mind where I always have this guilt of I ought to be reading this, but then I think, oh no, people read whatever they want and it's great. So I like that.
Your friend who reads the literary fiction, do you like the books that when you pick them up that she has read?
Yeah, generally. I think we had one we really disagreed on, but for the most part, she's just got really good taste. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that.
All right. So let's get to more of the specific questions and the general history of your reading.
Okay.
Is there one book that you feel guilty about never having read?
I've never read To Kill a Mockingbird. I know. And it's my sister's favorite book. And I know that I need to read it. But I just have never gotten to it. So I don't know.
I think you would like it.
I think so, too.
I think you would like it. There's a little bit of a mystery to it.
No one told me that.
A hint. It's not a huge mystery. But enough, I think, that you would like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that that's not one where I think people are just kind of talking it up for no reason. Mm-hmm. I think that it's probably something I really have a big gap in my reading, so I need to do that. I think that's the only one I've never read. Because I was gone that year, I feel like there are a lot of American books that I haven't read. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't read The Catcher in the Rye or On the Road or things like that. And I think that those are...
In my opinion, I'm not missing that much with On the Road, but I know it's very popular. Well regarded.
Yeah. So I guess I read enough about books that I generally can talk about them without having read them.
Yeah.
But I still think I need to have read some of these books, so...
Do you feel like there's a book that everybody else is reading that right now that you've not read or like around, you know, more current, not a classic?
I never read like The Night Circus was one that I heard a lot of people talk about that I never got to. And I know I would love it.
You would like
that. So it's just, there's too many things to read. I feel like I've always been, maybe not a book snob, but I always sort of felt like I needed to read the backlist mm-hmm. before I got to the front list. And so that just doesn't work mm-hmm. in the long run. because there's always a backlist. Right, you can never catch up.
Insurmountable mountain of backlist books.
And I feel like for a long time I just ignored that completely. So anything that was popular before maybe 2011, mm-hmm. I feel like I missed. So mm-hmm. there's lots of stuff like Eat, Pray, Love. I never read stuff like that. Yeah. Those really popular books that I never got to. So every now and then I check a bunch of them out from the library and say, this is the summer I'm going to read all these books and get caught up.
But it doesn't happen.
Yeah, getting caught up is not a concept that really
is true. Never caught up with books, ever. It's because there are just too many out constantly.
And they're always publishing new ones.
And I always have good intentions. Let's veer into my reading life here for a second. I always have good intentions. Like, I hear about other people who will do like particular periods of time where they'll only read backlist, you know, or they won't check anything out from the library. They'll only read from their own bookshelves to mm-hmm. try to catch up. And I always am like, oh yes, I should do that. And then it falls apart very quickly.
I used to have a plan of I had to read a library book and then I had to read a book I own and I had to alternate. And that lasted a day, maybe. Yeah. It just doesn't
happen.
It's
hard. And it's so hard with due dates for books, right, especially popular books. You feel responsible for getting them back as quickly as possible so the next person can read them.
Right. Librarian guilt is a real thing.
I know. All right. So have you ever gotten obsessed with an author where you read everything they've written, and then gone to book signings and that sort of stuff?
I don't think I've ever... I can't think of anyone where I've read all of their books because I always felt like there was something else to read. Mm-hmm. So I always have these intentions of reading everything that an author's written. I'm sure that when I was a kid, I read the whole catalog even books I'm thinking of, like Ella Montgomery. Mm-hmm. I loved her books. I know that there's stuff I haven't read of hers because you just get older and you have new things to move on to. So I don't know that there's anyone that I've read their whole catalog, unfortunately. I did get really into the author Anne Perry when I was in college. She was coming out. She has her two mystery series, and then she started writing a series that was set during World War One. And the first book came out when I was in college, and she came to the university I went to and did like a small talk at the library, and it was like just for staff. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how this happened. It was the strangest thing, but she came, and I had my mom come, and we just sat and listened to her, and I thought that was really fun. So I got a little bit obsessed with her at the time. And I liked that her books seemed really well researched, and I liked her writing style was intelligent but really engaging. Mm-hmm. So she came and did maybe three other book signings at a bookstore that's in Phoenix called The Poison Pen, which is a wonderful mystery bookstore. And we always went to those, even to the point of like ditching class or taking me out of work with my mom. We would go together to see these book readings from her. So I don't know why we got so into her specifically, because there were a lot of other authors we were reading at the time together. Yeah. It seems like she just was doing a lot of book tours, and we'd keep our eye on it and we'd go. Cool. So it was a really fun thing, a fun mother-daughter kind of thing to do. So
you mentioned when you were trying to read backlist, are you a series reader that you have to read in order, or can you read out of order?
Oh my gosh, I cannot read anything out of order. Oh, it makes my heart hurt just to think about it. Do you read out of order?
Oh gosh, no. No.
That makes it feel
so
good.
But people do. There are a lot of people who don't care.
How do they do that?
I don't know.
I can't even say anything about that.
I know. I don't understand. Even because there will be people who come in the library and say, well, it doesn't really matter. You know, you can read them out of order.
Yeah.
But I know. It matters to me.
Yeah. And I know sometimes like with mystery series, they don't really tell you things that happened in the books previously, but sometimes they still reference something. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that feeling. I don't like that one bit.
And now, do you have any dirty little reading secrets?
For some reason, even though I love to read, I always want to know what my time frame is on reading. So I always look at the end of the chapter or count how many pages I have to the end of the chapter or the end of the book and sort of do the math on, okay, now you've got five more pages. But I get so many spoilers that way.
Yes.
And it's such a bad system. It's terrible. Why would I do that to myself? But I do it all the time. So it's kind of nice to read things on Kindle because I don't really, you kind of can do that, but it just doesn't work the same way.
I like the Kindle has how many minutes left in a chapter, the book. I like that because it gives you a sense of, you know, if you're in the middle of reading something and you're getting tired before bed and you only have 5 minutes, maybe you'll stick it out for that 5 minutes. But if it's 25 minutes, I'll think to myself, no, there's no way. I'm just going to stop for the night. So I do like that. So I have the same impulse, I would say, but I don't do the same thing.
Yeah.
Is there a book that has surprised you?
I read The Cuckoo's Calling by, it's J.K. Rowling, but it's Robert Galbraith, but she is her pseudonym. And I really didn't like the first adult book that she wrote, which was The Casual Vacancy. I just was not into that at all. So I kind of went into The Cuckoo's Calling thinking, I'm reading this. I think it was for a book club. I don't think I would have picked it up on my own after disliking The Casual Vacancy so much. But then it just, I got so into it. I thought it was so interesting. And so she just totally redeemed herself in my mind of being able to write an adult book and make it feel compelling and not like it was working too hard to seem adult. It just felt very natural to me. Mm-hmm. And so that was probably the most recent one that surprised me. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in reading classics, there's always, like I remember reading Jane Eyre and thinking, this should be harder to read than it is. But yes, it was such a page turner. Yes, and so exciting. And so even rereading it later as an adult, I knew the outcome and I knew everything that would happen in the story, but I still was like, I can't put this down. This is just too good. So
have you read Wilkie Collins?
Yes.
Yes. Same way. I feel like. Yeah. Page turner.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that experience of finding a book where you didn't expect it to be as good as it is.
Yeah. And is there a book that has stayed with you or influenced you a lot in your life?
I read in one of my Scandinavian literature classes, I read a book called Seven Gothic Tales by Isak Dinesen. Mm-hmm. And I won't talk about it too much because I think at some point we'll probably do a favorite books mm-hmm. podcast. And that's what I always call my favorite book. But she has a part in one of her stories. It's a collection of short stories, which there's seven of them, as said in the title. Yeah,
tricky that.
I know. And she has one story that focuses on a woman who basically lives multiple different lives and just sort of drops personalities at will and moves on to a different personality. And that was always really appealing to me because I always felt growing up like I had these different sides of my personality that didn't really fit together. Mm-hmm. And I never really could find a group that I belonged to completely because I was into books, but I was also into indie rock and mm-hmm. I was into just goofy comedy. I never found a group that encompassed all those things, and I always beat myself up a lot about that and felt like I should be able to just be one thing. And so when there's a line in the book that talks about how you need to be as many different people as you possibly can, and that really, really stuck with me and just became something I thought, this is okay to want to do all kinds of different things. Yeah. And that they don't have to match together, and who cares if you have to jump from group to group in order to be okay with that. So it sort of became not my mantra, but my, I guess, words to live by. Mm-hmm. So.
And then is there a book that you are afraid of or intimidated by?
I don't think I could ever read Ulysses.
Oh,
I'm so scared of Ulysses. Have you ever read it?
No, gosh.
Okay.
That makes me
feel better.
I don't do stream of consciousness very well with reading. Doesn't click for me. So
yeah. No, I'm, and I hate to say that I feel like I'm not smart enough to read Ulysses, but I feel that way.
Yeah.
So I'm just terrified of it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I feel like the only way I could ever do Ulysses is in some sort of like class setting where somebody's explaining it to me as we're going along or some of the allusions that are made and stuff like that. I don't think I could do it on my own.
Yeah.
I don't think.
No, I agree. And then I've also heard people talk about Wolf Hall as being very intimidating. And so
that's good.
I think I would like it.
Yeah. That is more because she uses he to refer to Thomas Cromwell, but she also uses he to refer to other people.
Right. It's like,
and so it's confusing. It's like, so it can be really confusing. But I thought once I got into it, I just sort of always assumed he was Thomas Cromwell unless mm-hmm. something happened that was like, oh no, that's not.
Right.
And so I was okay with that. I thought that was just a really good book.
Yeah.
We read that in my book club and people didn't like it for that very reason.
Yeah.
It felt like it was needlessly muddling the story to it that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But obviously it was a choice she made.
Yeah. Yeah.
And her second one, Bring Up the Bodies, she doesn't do that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Because I knew that about the book, I've always thought, it just intimidated me a little bit. Not to the point of not reading it because I have it. I own it, but I still have maybe put it off a little bit.
A little bit. How do you decide what you're going to read?
Guilt, mainly. I get tons and tons and tons of books from publishers and all by my request. I just am a glutton for picking out books that I possibly, I have no chance of ever reading any of these books. So often it's just deadlines where I feel like I need to have written a review for this publisher and to keep me in good graces with them, probably. And I'm run one book club and I'm in probably three other book clubs. And so often it's just responsibilities for that. And sometimes I get really frustrated with that because I feel like I should be able to just read what sounds good and what sounds exciting. And I see books all the time that come in as new books and I think I would love to read that, but I don't have time right now. And that's not really the point of reading, is to enjoy it and to be taken away to a place where you don't have to think about these responsibilities. And I'm not really in that place right now. So I feel like I'm a little bit of negotiating with myself how I'm going to read going forward and letting myself read what I want and still keep up on things that are coming out. And I need to figure out a better way than what I'm doing right now. But often it's just what is sort of in front of me. Yeah. So, but I use Goodreads a lot. I get a lot of notifications from friends of what they're reading, and I really like that. I think it's really fun to see what everyone else is into. And if I get something that's getting a lot of attention, then that maybe raises it up on my radar a little bit more. So
I would encourage you to let go of the guilt.
It's a
beautiful thing.
I know.
When I did that, it was so freeing.
Yeah. I can't even really comprehend what that would feel like because I'm still mired in guilt right now.
There are still commitments that, with book clubs and stuff, but for this project do, sometimes I feel like, oh, there are certain books I want to read, but it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Maybe next year will be my my year of no responsibilities.
It was my year's resolution.
That's a good resolution.
All right. And what format do you read?
Generally print, but I think I usually have maybe three books going at a time. So sometimes I throw audiobooks in there, but I tend to listen to podcasts more now just to keep up on book podcasts too, another form of guilt. I really like audiobooks. The CD player in my car quit working though, so I don't do that as much as I used to. I think I normally do print books if it's something that's come out, but if it's something that is on its way, the publisher has sent me a digital copy of it, so I have a Kindle just for that. Mm-hmm. And I've never bought a book on my Kindle. I just use those for just use that for the pre-published books. And it took me a really long time to get a Kindle. I just got it in the last year, and I've always sort of, it didn't really seem like something I'd be interested in, but it's been really, really nice to be able to. The search function on it is such a nice thing. And if I think of something that, like a character that was mentioned where I kind of can't remember what their deal was when they were mentioned the first time, then usually I have to go through every page of the book to try to find that. And now I just search it. It's crazy.
I know.
It's so nice. So I don't know that I can do a percentage on it, but mostly print. But then I always have these pre-published books that I'm reading on the side.
And do you tend to reread or not?
I used to. I almost never do anymore. Mm-hmm. There's just too much out there. So maybe if it's for a book club, I'll reread it. But even then, I'm pretty hesitant to reread it. There are some things like childhood favorites that I definitely would like to reread. But almost always, I feel too much like I've got to be finishing this monster list in my head.
All right. So that brings us, what is on your to read list?
I have had my eye on, there's some stuff that's coming out. We talked about the fall previews, all those books on my fall preview list I'm really excited about. I'm really excited for Carry On by Rainbow Rowell. I'm excited about the Mindy Kaling book that's coming out. I really wanted to read what's called Quiet, the nonfiction book about introverts.
Susan Cain, yep.
Yeah. I've had so many people recommend that to me, and I need to get my hands on it and just finish that. And I think that it would be a really good one for me. I really want to read all of Gillian Flynn's books besides Gone Girl. Yeah. I think I've read Dark Places, maybe. I can't remember exactly, but I know that she has another book, and I'd like to read all of her books just because they're just really intriguing to me. And I there's another book called called A Darker Shade of Magic that came out this past year. You like that one?
I liked that one.
I check that out just over and over again, and I think I'll love it, but I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah.
There's just too many other things that come up where I feel like I have to get this other thing read before I can read that one. So I think I've had it checked out continuously for like, don't know, since it came out, probably. Just keep
You're
turning
the
it.
One who has.
Well, we've got multiple copies, okay. So I don't feel guilty about it, but I turn it in and I recheck it out and turn it in. So I'll get to it eventually.
Someday.
Yes.
And that's going to be a series. So you could wait a little bit if you wanted to and read.
Yeah.
Wait till the next one comes
out. Yeah. That'll be great.
Well, that was good, Anne.
Thanks.
That was fun.
It's fun.
About your reading life.
Yeah. It's fun to think about.
Yeah.
To think how you became the reader you are.
We will be right back after this brief break with what we're reading this week. What are you reading this week?
So, as I mentioned, The Cuckoo's Calling really surprised me as a book I really loved. So I decided to get into the second book in the series called The Silkworm. It's by Robert Galbraith as the author on the cover, but it's actually J.K. Rowling. And I'm actually doing that as an audiobook right now.
Oh, is it so, a good audio?
Yeah, I think it's really well read. There's sometimes some details that are a little bit confusing, but I think that's just the nature of audiobooks that you sort of tune out for a second. So it's the second book in the Cormoran Strike mystery series, and the only information you really need to know from the first book going into the second one is about the character. They do mention the mystery in the first book a lot, but they don't really tell you any solutions or anything of what was going on. You just know that it's given Strike a lot of notoriety at that point in in his life. So just for some background information, Strike is a British war veteran, and he lost his leg in Afghanistan, and he's now working as a private detective in London. He has very few friends, but he did have a relationship that was a really long-standing kind of turbulent relationship that has just ended as well. So he's just sort of a brooding, gentle hulk of a man. So I don't know if he's really gentle. It seems like he could do some dangerous things, but he has an assistant who's named Robin, and she was hired by Strike for his first case and then stayed on just to be his assistant. And she wants to be more involved in the business, but she is having a hard time having Strike see her in that type of light. She is engaged and her fiance doesn't approve of her being involved with Strike. So there's a little bit of tension there. So the mystery is centered around a missing novelist named Owen Quine, whose wife has decided to hire Strike to search for him. And he's been gone for several days, but he's done this before, so she doesn't want to go to the police. So she's asking Strike to investigate this murder or this disappearance, which you find out pretty soon is a murder. In the days leading up to his disappearance, he had been trying to get his newest manuscript published, and it basically is this poison pen tell-all that he's going to out all these people in the publishing industry that have wronged him somehow. It's just completely unflattering to so many people, and so there's a lot of people that don't want this to become published. But he was told it was unpublishable, but before it had gotten to press, a lot of people had read it already. So there's kind of a finite number of suspects that could be involved with this. So Strike finds Quine murdered, and so he has to investigate how this murder happened or who perpetrated the murder. And the murder itself is done in the same way that his alter ego is murdered in the manuscript. So there's only so many people that have read this that would know this information. So it's just, you know, scary what people want to do. And that's basically as far as I've gotten. I haven't read too far into it, but I really think that she does a good job of she's obviously a really, really good writer, and she makes the story kind of dark and gritty without seeming like it's trying too hard to be dark and gritty. It just is a really intriguing world for me. So far I'm liking it. I always recommend the series to people if they like their mysteries kind of grittier than darker than than your Agatha Christie. It's kind of police procedural but still a detective, but has that level of darkness that I think appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah, I like those a lot. And there's a third one coming out.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. Soon, I think. October?
I'm not sure the date, but yeah, very, very soon.
All right, so I am reading a book called Nowhere But Home by Liza Palmer. This is about a woman named Queenie Wake, who is a chef, and she goes back to her small hometown in Texas, mm-hmm. called North Star, Texas, after being fired from a restaurant job where she got mad at somebody for putting ketchup on his eggs, and so she yelled at him and got fired. And so she needs to go back home and regroup and figure out what her next step is. And she returns back there to live with her sister and her nephew. Her sister is a single mom, and her nephew is about to be, he's a freshman in high school, he's about to be the star of the football team. So her sister encourages her to come back, you know, and see this first game and the excitement that surrounds mm-hmm. the fact that he's going to be on the football team. And they, the two sisters, Queenie and her sister, had a tough time growing up because their mother was kind of neglectful to the daughters. And she was known around town as she could cook very well. And she had a restaurant. And so people liked her cooking. But she was also known as somebody who would steal other women's husbands. And so generally the people in the town looked down on the whole family. And ultimately their mother was killed by one of the women that was the wife of the husband that she was with. So, so Queenie has grown up protecting herself from everybody's judgments and the gossip that that's going around about her. And so she's really reluctant to return to this small town where she knows everybody is gossiping and talking mm-hmm. about her family and looking down on her. But she goes back and she loves her sister. They're very, very close. And so that's encouragement enough for her to go back and spend time with her sister and her nephew. And while she figures out what the next step is going to be, she takes a job at the local prison cooking last meals for the inmates who are on death row. And it's she's very hesitant to do that, and she's very cautious about the idea of it, and it doesn't quite sit well with her until she actually starts cooking. And then it really surprises her how much it shows her about what she wants to do with her career and what she wants to do with cooking. And I don't want to give too much away about mm-hmm. what the decision she comes to, but it's a surprise to her how much she enjoys part of that aspect of the job. And at the same time, she also reconnects with her high school love, the love of her life, who she's never really gotten over. But she was regarded by his family as unacceptable socially. And so they encouraged him to ultimately marry somebody else, which is why she left the small town. And so she's come back and she reconnects with him. And there's still a lot of unresolved feelings about what happened at the time and where they are in their lives now. And I am in the moment deep into a rewatch of Friday Night Lights, which I don't know if you've seen that television show, but it's about a small town in Texas and all revolves around the football teams uh-huh. there. And so it was just, you know, coincidental timing that I read this at the same time. But I felt like I could picture a lot of what she was writing because I've been watching this TV show, which I love. And she just, I think it's a really well-drawn story about the town and the sisters and the people that populate the town and the reverence they give to these high school football players mm-hmm. who are on this team. And it's really touching and it's heartwarming, but it's not light. I mean, there's the part about her cooking the last meals for the inmates that adds a bit of weight to the story mm-hmm. and a little bit of intensity. So it could sound like a typical chick lit kind of a book, and I have nothing against a typical chick lit mm-hmm. book, but this has a little bit more resonance, I would say, than some of the chick lit that I've read as Queenie tries to figure out where her life is taking her. And although there is a bit of romance to it, but that's not the main portion of the story. So that's Nowhere But Home by Liza Palmer. If you want to get in touch with us to give us feedback or a suggestion on a topic you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes or your other podcast provider of choice. Our podcast is engineered by Adam Farver. Our theme music is Kitten by Poddington Bear. We keep our show notes at beaufortcountylibrary.org/wellread, where you can find a listing of every book we talked about in this episode. If you'd like a book recommendation list tailored specifically for you, please go to beaufortcountylibrary.org/mynextbook and take a brief survey on what type of books you like. You will need a BCL library card in order to use the service. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading!